This is Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
Good morning to Sarah Henderson. How are you?
Good morning, Mitchell. How are you this morning?
Very good. And first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time out from your busy schedule to join the program. We really appreciate it.
No, that's my absolute pleasure. I'm a big fan of your program and The Pulse, and great to be with you today.
So it's been about a year since you started up as the federal member for Corangamite. Can you tell us about how it's gone so far?
Well, I think locally I've been working very hard as a strong local voice right across the electorate. It's around about 7,500 square kilometres, so a very big electorate, including the southern suburbs of Geelong, all the way up almost to Ballarat, Colac, all the way down the Great Ocean Road past Cape Otway. So it's a big electorate and lots of hard work to be done, but of course a great honour. And I think, Mitchell, we've really been focused on delivering on what we said we would do. Mm. So we have, as we committed to do, abolished the carbon tax and the mining tax. We are rapidly moving to fix the budget. We've announced $50 billion of infrastructure investment, including, of course, our big upgrades locally, the Great Ocean Road, the Princes Highway and the East-West Link, which is so vital for our region. We've concluded a couple of free trade agreements with Japan and Korea. We're rolling out a whole range of programs to support people move back into work, and we know that's a challenge in the Geelong region. We're also trying to fix the NBN and roll that out, and already we've reached double the number of subscribers in a year. So right across the economy, but with a very strong focus on jobs and infrastructure, we are fixing Labor's mess and doing what we said we would do.
Now, I see you in Parliament because you sit just behind the Prime Minister there, so I always see you in question time. And, you know, you're talking about the repeal of the carbon tax and that it saved people in Corangamite's electricity bills. But you say that you're in favour of maintaining the renewable energy target. I just wanted to ask your thoughts on this, because doesn't that also drive up power prices like the carbon tax did?
No, not at all. In fact, the modelling, which was conducted by the Warburton Review, showed that after 2020, the renewable energy target would in fact drive down electricity prices. So there's very strong evidence to support that. Yes, we are very concerned about the cost of living, about driving down electricity prices. That's why the carbon tax has gone. Across Geelong, it was such a toxic tax. And just look at manufacturing. It cost the manufacturing sector $1.1 billion a year. But look, I'm I'm very passionate about the environment. I'm a very big supporter of the renewable energy target, which of course was a measure introduced by the Howard government. And I've spoken out very strongly because we must continue to invest in renewables. And more so than anything else, perhaps, a renewable energy target has really supported industry's move into renewable energy, and that must continue.
Now, Gary of Highton has a question. He wants to know, what is your position on fracking in the area? He says that many councils are opposed to the practice.
Look, I accept that we've got some real issues with our energy security, but as the local member for Corangamite, I am concerned about fracking in small regional communities. I've already spoken out very strongly against fracking at a big rally in Moriac, supporting the communities of Paraparap, Moriac, Mount Moriac and Freshwater Creek. I'm a big believer, and no matter the development, it's got to be in the right area. And our food security, our agricultural resources, let's not forget tourism. I mean, this is an incredible part of the world, and we've got to look after it. We've got to look after our environment. And in those small communities, I just don't think it's appropriate.
So fracking could happen in some areas, but not in those certain communities. Is that what you're saying?
Well, look, really importantly, and let's not forget, the Napthine government have absolutely taken the lead on this. There is a moratorium on fracking and onshore gas exploration in Victoria. And Dennis Napthine has been an incredible leader on this issue, as he is with many other issues, basically saying until we are convinced that the science supports fracking, this state government won't be permitting it. So I think it's shown incredibly strong leadership, and it's also demonstrated an incredible support for our environment.
A question from Nick Day says, does the federal coalition support the phasing out of high-emission fossil fuel power stations like Anglesey once they've become redundant?
Well, look, I think there are some particularly vexed issues in relation to the Alcoa coal-fired power station. We, of course, need coal in this country at the moment, and there is no doubt about that. If coal was shut down tomorrow, our country would be shut down tomorrow. But I have spoken out very strongly in relation to some issues at the Anglesey Power Station. It emits some 39 million tonnes of sulphur dioxide a year, many times more than Hazelwood, and Hazelwood's actually 10 times as big as Anglesey. It's a comparatively a dirty power station. It has supported the jobs at Point Henry, but I think with Point Henry now closing, a lot more people in the Anglesey community and the broader region are questioning the future of Anglesey. But certainly I've been incredibly disappointed. Alcoa have refused to install sulphur dioxide scrubbers, which would do so much to clean up the air, and I've been really quite outspoken about that. Clean air in small communities in this precious part of the world is so, so important, and I will continue to speak out on this very important issue.
Yeah, so you support the installation of these sulphur dioxide scrubbers?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been talking about this for a number of years, and it's incredibly disappointing Alcoa have taken no action in this regard. They really have sat on their hands. The power station is now up for sale, and I've already written to the Environment Minister, and I know he's been very supportive of the notion of including sulphur dioxide, the review of sulphur dioxide levels as part of our COAG review of clean air regulations. So I certainly think there's a lot of more hard work to be done, but for anyone considering buying this power station, I can tell you I will be campaigning day and night to ensure that Alcoa is a much cleaner power station than it is at the moment. Because frankly, the way it is currently operating, it is unacceptable.
Well, ideally, would you like to see it closed down, given that Alcoa is no longer using the power generated there?
Well, the government doesn't have the power to seek for a coal-fired power station to be closed down like Anglesey. But frankly, I just don't think that it's sustainable the way Alcoa are running it at the moment. It's got to be cleaned up. I'm very aware there are 80 people who work there, and we know how important those jobs are, and that's why I'm such a big supporter of the renewable energy target, because I think the RET can drive jobs in the energy industry in a whole new range of spheres, particularly in large-scale solar, where I think we've got so much potential as a country. But at the moment we have an oversupply of power on the East Coast. That is something that does have to be addressed. But certainly the Alcoa Anglesey Power Station, as it's operating at the moment, is simply not viable for the future.
Here's a question from Simon of Grovedale. This is about education. He says that with high youth unemployment in the Greater Geelong region, why is the cost of going to university set to increase to unaffordable levels for most students, I guess, with the Coalition's policy of deregulating university fees? He says that it's penalising students from low to mid-income families. What are your thoughts there?
Well, that's simply not the case, and despite the Education Union and the Labor Scare campaign, we are already seeing the notion of fee deregulation roll out some very affordable fees. So let's not forget that we have to be the most, we have to improve our competitiveness in universities because Australia is slipping behind. And most of the universities and most of the sector are robustly behind the deregulation of universities, which allow them to be the best that they can be. So if you look what's happened at the University of Western Australia, one of four Australian universities in the world's top 100, they have set their undergraduate fees for every course at $16,000 a year. Now, that's half what Labor claimed they would be. So what we are seeing, is simply not the evidence that Labor and the unions have claimed would be the case. The most important thing also, we have perhaps the biggest Commonwealth scholarship program for disadvantaged students, which really will be very important to students in regional Australia. Not $1 of these fees is payable up front, and it won't be payable up front until a student goes into the workforce and earns at least $50,000 a year. So this is the best loan that a student can ever possibly have in their lifetime. It supports a wonderful access to university education. But what we're also doing is we are uncapping the access to sub-bachelor degrees, because up until now and currently, the Commonwealth support for those that type of study has been capped and limited. We are uncapping that, and that's a very, very big advance for, you know, some 80,000 students.
Now, I appreciate that you've got to go. I just wanted to get your quick response to this question from Dr. Cecilia Mason. She says that the offshore detention of asylum seekers costs about 10 times more than if every boat person was placed in the community on full Centrelink benefits. She says, what is the rationale for continuing offshore detention?
Look, funnily enough, I met with Dr. Cecily Mason yesterday, along with some other local residents concerned about asylum seekers, and I was able to assure Dr. Mason that we are moving very, very quickly to process the 30,000 or so people that were left as a result of the absolute disarray of Labor's policies, where we saw in excess of 50,000 people come into Australia by boat. We are going to be introducing temporary protection visas so that people can be processed quickly, they can move into the community, they can work, they can obtain benefits such as Medicare. And significantly for the region, we're also going to be introducing what's called a safe haven enterprise visa. And that particular visa will allow asylum seekers who have worked for a substantial part of time to be able to access a range of other visas. And, you know, so again, I think what we are demonstrating is that through our consistent policies, we have stopped the drownings at sea. The fact of the matter is that we are saving billions of dollars in the overall costs of this terrible situation, and we're obviously working very hard to secure our borders, because we know how important that is, particularly when you look at what's going on at the moment, which is nothing short of a tragedy, and I'm referring, of course, to the Middle East.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. There's always plenty to talk about, but unfortunately we're out of time. Thank you.
It's been really great to talk to you. I look forward to speaking to you again soon, Mitch.
Thank you. I hope we can speak again in the future. Sarah Henderson there, the member for Corangamite, and always plenty of interesting questions to ask. And all the listeners that put in questions, we got to most of them, but unfortunately there were a few more that we couldn't get to. Richard Miles is going to be joining us after 10 o'clock, so if you still have questions that you'd like posed to him, you can email them through to feedback@mitchellsfrontpage.com. You can give us a call on 5222 5947, or you can even tweet them through on Twitter.